There's a story in Shabbos about Rishim Ben Rechai coming out of the cave, and I talked about this last night, and he sees people that don't live up to the standards that he believes in, the standards of learning Torah Yom V'Layim, the standards of Melach Tanasa Sayyidei Acherim. It's a very famous machlokas between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai in Brachos, Daf Lamed Hei Amud Beis. Parshas Kriya Shema presents two opposing images. One is V'yasavta Digonecha V'tiroshcha V'yitzarecha. You should work, have a job, be a doctor, be a lawyer, be high tech, go to the army, and then on your spare time, you'll study Torah. Rishim Ben Yochai said, wait a second, if you're going to work and plow and reap, when are you going to learn? An hour here, an hour there? You can't conquer Torah an hour here and now. It's high school. An hour here, an hour there. You can't conquer Torah, you have to be committed to it full time. So you should learn Torah the whole day, Rishim Ben Yochai said. And V'yasavta Digonecha means that you trust that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will provide, or the language is, of course, Melachta Nasa Sayyidei Acherim. Other people will provide for you. And this is really the genesis, the embryo, of the two different ways to view the world. And one way to view the world is, I learned Torah. That's the ideal. That's the way it's supposed to be. In Gan Eden, let me say it differently, everyone's a Haredi. In Medev Mashiach, Mashiach comes, everyone's a Haredi. Namely, everyone learns Torah, Yom V'Layla. There's nothing else in a perfect world. No jobs, no army, no society, no Tikkun Olam, no Or LaGoyim. Everything's all smooth and solved. And you learn Torah. We live in this little space called history. That's a small little 6,000-year period. It's very, very, very anecdotal. It's not eternity. It's not prehistory. It's not what history is meant to be. We're stating on Eden. So in this fallen world that we live in, this little space we occupy, we have two choices. We can either say we're sticking to the ideal and let the chips fall where they may, or we're going to change our lifestyles to try to redeem a fallen world and work in a fallen world. And so that's the whole debate. It's not a huge, huge debate about what the reality is and what the ideal is. It's how to navigate this fallen world we live in. Sometimes it's important to keep that in mind. Okay, so two different shitas. Rabbi Shmuel's shita is to go work and to learn with whatever time you have available. And Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai's shita is to learn all day. And keep in mind, it's a very, very interesting moral statement. Melachtan nasis aydei acherim. The entire, let's say, Haredi approach, and for some people, it's very morally abrasive, is that, you know, we're the learners and everything else will be taken care of for us. If you want to join us, join us. But that's the way Hashem created the world. There are learners and non-learners. And the learners are committed to Talmud Torah, and the non-learners have to support. And of course, you can talk about that in Europe. You can talk about that when we had Jewish dynasty. But to talk about that in the state of Israel today, some people feel, well, we're under siege. We're fine. So again, that's not getting into the whole debate, but those are the two positions stated. So anyway, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai leaves the cave, and he sees a person who isn't learning. He's following Rabbi Shmuel Shita. He incinerates him. So the Baskol comes out and says, I didn't send you out of the cave. For that reason, get back into the cave. 12 months later, he and his son leave the cave a second time. And they see the same thing, because as the Gemara says in Brachos, most people can't really live to the Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai ideal. And we're in a very, 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 very unique stage of history. I don't know how long this is going to last. But right now it's a perfect storm. State of Israel, there's a lot of Jewish wealth in the world, there's a lot of support for Torah. So today you have multi-generations of people that are learning and committed to learning. The grandfather learned in Kollel, son learns in Kollel, the grandchildren learn in Kollel. It's hard to imagine how long this can last because you're not creating a solid financial system. We'll see. It's hard to know. We've never had a situation like this. Normally, people are committed to a lifestyle of complete Talmud Torah. It was through poverty and through struggle and pastor Melach Tochal. Today, more or less, no one's starving. More or less, people are supporting themselves. People are getting married. People have cars. People are... We'll see how long it lasts, right? There's a bubble. There's a financial bubble in the United States and Western civilization to a degree that's supporting, State of Israel supporting. Hopefully, it will last. You never know. We've had financial breakdowns before. World War I was a complete financial collapse, and the entire yeshiva system that was built before World War I fell into financial chaos. How it affected the yeshiva world is a whole different story. Financially, it was very rough sledding. My great-grandfather, I didn't really talk with him because he passed away when I was 7. Remember, we didn't have great-grandparents like you guys had, like, you know, you'll have and you'll talk. I was a little child, I remember, but I heard stories about him that in Europe he was set up to learn his whole life, and his father-in-law was going to support him, and he was known to be a goon, and And then World War I happened. Everything fell apart. He was left without a job, without education, without any skill. And his whole life he had to basically pivot and find ways. So Reb Shimon Bar Yochai and his son come out a second time, and they see someone not learning, someone working. So Reb Shimon Bar Yochai has become a little bit more temperate. He's not going to burn anyone. Doesn't do the eye thing. But now his son wants to incinerate him, because obviously younger people are more zealous, and it's very hard when you're young to balance between zeal and tolerance. Some people are so zealous. I was talking about this last night. You came to yeshiva, you found your derech, this is your derech, you're excited about it. They look at your friend, and maybe he's pursuing a slightly different derech. It's very hard to ratify derech and the difference. You get a little older, hopefully, not with everyone, but hopefully you're able to say that zeal means the things that I love. But I let other people love other things, and it doesn't have to in any way undercut or subvert my own love. So Reb Shimon Bar Yochai learned his lesson. His son is still very fanatical and very puritanical. What do they see? This is what I'm getting to. What do they see? Who knows the Gemara in Shabbos? What do they see that calms him down? Right, very good. An old man running by with your hadassah. So they ask him, where are you going? So what does he say?
To prepare for Shabbos.
Prepare for Shabbos. Very good. Some air freshener for his house. Some perfume for his house. This, by the way, Ezra, is the source of 2 candles as a minimum. Right? The minhag is today, a lot of women light the amount of candles per child. But if you go away for Shabbos, or, you know, somebody say, why? Light 2 candles. Why 2? 1 for Zachar, 1 for Shamor, basis, Kamar, Shabbos. Ah, all of a sudden, no more incinerating, no more laser eyes, no more laser beams, and everything's all fine. What's happening here? What's happening with this moment? What's happening is that there are certain mitzvahs that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created in history that are immune to the ravages of history. Hashem knew, because Hashem knows everything, that throughout history not every Jew would keep Torah. It's hard, especially when we're going to Galus. When I see Jews today that don't keep halacha, I'm not filled with anger, I'm not filled with contempt, I'm not filled with disdain, it's sad, it's painful. But I understand that after so many years in Galus, after so much struggle, so much persecution, you don't know how good you have it, you don't know how terribly Jews suffer, pogroms and inquisitions and torment and censure and burning of svarim and loot. It's just, and then secularization. And then on top of that, I don't want to say the cherry on top of that, but it's a metaphor, the Holocaust. At a certain point, people just gave up. So it's just, where is Hashem? I don't want to be part of this people anymore. To be part of the Jewish people in the end of history, to be firm, you've got to be crazy. Baruch Hashem, we're crazy. We're crazy in love. We're crazy in faith. We're crazy in... So Hashem knew that throughout history, at certain points, not every Jew would keep every mitzvah. He created certain mitzvahs which are immune to the ravages of time. Certain mitzvahs that would outlast every Jew, no matter how far they would go, there'd be something that would pull them close to the bat mitzvah. What was, for example, Mila. Mila is always a mitzvah that throughout history, Jews felt a very, very strong pull towards, even if they didn't keep all the mitzvahs. They tell stories about the conversos who weren't able to keep mitzvahs, having mila after they died, which you don't really know. But it was actually a minhag to give mila to people after they had died, or people that had converted to Christianity throughout the Middle Ages, and a lot of them. So the family gave them mila. Today, how many Yid and Eretz Yisrael don't keep Torah mitzvahs, don't put on tefillin, don't keep Shabb in the classic way, but this is mila. Have a bris mila, because you're a Jew. Shabbos is another one of those mitzvahs. Like today, Baruch Hashem, we have this program called the Shabbos Project, and Chutz La'aretz in Eretz Yisrael. Today, most people in Eretz Yisrael keep some form of Shabbos. The average Masoreti Israeli goes to shul, comes home, lights candles, goes to shul, comes home, has a Shabbos meal, and turns on the television, goes on the phone, goes to the game, goes to the beach, goes to the hotel. Okay, we're not happy with that, but it's something. And the truth is, that's what scares me about trying to enforce halacha, because by enforcing halacha, you could alienate people from religion. So if we impose halachic standards on people, we may ironically drive them further away. Some people say, no, they'll see the light. And they'll... So it's a very, very delicate balance in Eretz Yisrael, introducing religion to the public sphere. So what they saw is they say, you know what, there's a kedusha to every Jewish person, and even if they're not learning Torah, and even if they're not keeping mitzvahs, there's still some kedusha. Shabbos, and the fact that this old man, who is not learning, is running by with such zeal and such excitement to bring these 2 hadassim home to his house. So they learned, and this is something that Chassidus picked up later, that Hashem creates 2 different tiers. There's the tier that Baruch Hashem we're all on, and the track that we're all on. When you get to Shemayim, I hope you're not going to have to win your way into Olam Haba to some, by the way, I have bris milah, because I'll say that Avraham Avinu makes the rounds in the lineup to Olam Haba, and he picks out all the Jews who are on their way to the Gehenna line if they have a bris milah. So you didn't deserve to go to Olam Haba. You lived a life that deserves Gehenna. If you have a bris milah, I'm just, come with me, I'll get you in the side door. I hope that scenario doesn't happen with anyone here. Now we're standing on the Gehenna line, we'll be standing on the Olam Haba line. Torah, mitzvahs, a lifetime of chesed, a lifetime of Eretz Yisrael, you'll be on the right line. But bris milah is one way Hashem creates for people to be pulled out of the line, proverbially, to move into the right line. So they saw that there's two tiers. There's a tier that Hashem prefers, then there's a tier of mitzvahs, whether it's milah, whether it's Shabbos, whether it's Eretz Yisrael, which I think is a way for Jews who aren't really connected to ritual, aren't really connected to halacha, to be connected to our people. I think Hashem will pull out people that are committed to Israel from that line, even though they're not on the halachic line, and move them into Olam Haba. I talked about this earlier this week, where Rabbi Meir said, if you say Kriya Shema and you speak Hebrew, you live in Israel, you get to Olam Haba. Okay, I don't think anyone's going to be hoping to punch the ticket to Olam Haba based on those three low-level levels of Jewish identity. So they saw a Jew keeping Shabbos, and they realized, yeah, there's something inherently holy about a Jew, and even if they're not able to ascend to the level that we would prefer, they're still keeping basic mitzvahs. And then thousands of years later, I'd say about 1600 years later, Hasidus took this concept and created a whole, almost a religion about it, about Kedushas Yisrael, that every Jew has a part of HaKadosh Baruch Hu within them, and it's immutable and it's inalienable. So I wanted to talk about Shema, but it's already too long. It's a nice story to think about how we view. Do we want Jews to keep halacha? Yes. Do we want Jews to learn Torah all day? Yes. Do we want Jews? You're going to find, though, go back for the summer, a lot of your friends maybe didn't succeed as much as you did. And you know, are you going to burn them with your eyes? Or are you going to say, you know what? Every Jew has Kedusha, and it doesn't justify diluted standards, but rather, tolerance is a mitzvah. Some people feel like the more tolerance, the T word, tolerance sometimes sounds like you're less, oh, you're too tolerant. Tolerance is part of firm. Being tolerant and understanding your nature, it doesn't seem that way, because when you're young, you itemize four or five or six traits of firmkeit. So that's what it means to be firm. I want to be stark. Hate that word, stark. Don't be stark. Okay? Be stark in yourself. Suddenly stark can incinerate other people. So just think about what it means to be more firm. I wrote an article this week in one of the newspapers, and it was in the Post, will appear, about how he managed the Kotel. Because next week is Yom Yerushalayim. In 1967, the Kotel was a unifying force. And unfortunately, I'm happy, but unfortunately, the Kotel now is a place for Frum Jews. Kotel, Arabayis. And slowly, the non-Frum Israelis are losing their commitment to the Kotel, in part because they want different types of tefillos, they don't want separate tefillos. So we're in a bind. We're really in a bind. How do we create a Kotel that will still be a Kotel for the entire people while still maintaining strict standards? I don't have an answer, but I see what's happening. It has to bother us. And one of the lines I have in the article is, it's not more from to make the Kotel less accessible. You know, oh, I'm more from, I don't want people to come. It's more from to make sure as many people... Now, I don't have a solution, because the Kotel is a base field. It has to be separate. But there are creative solutions, which, sadly enough, as I wrote, because of pettiness and historical myopia, and we're not going to gain if we turn the Kotel into a place for from people. The Kotel has to be a place for all of Am Yisrael, and how do we navigate the two? So sometimes you got to check yourself. All these phrases that people say make you less from, you know, sometimes make you actually more from. So being more tolerant to people, that's part of your avodas Hashem, without diluting your own standards. Okay? Kapish? Have a good day, everyone.
Thank you.
You're welcome. That was unexpected. Okay. Tomorrow it's Kriya Shema. Actually, tomorrow is Thursday.